This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The women's healthcare movement can take a lot of the credit for the acceptance of natural childbirth and for allowing partners in the delivery room, for the legalization of abortion, and many other changes. But perhaps one of its greatest achievements has been helping women feel more knowledgeable about, at ease with, and in control of their bodies. A book that helped launch the women's health movement is Our Bodies Ourselves. It was perhaps the first book about women's bodies written for women, by women, from a feminist perspective. It was written by the Boston Women's Health Book Collective, which is celebrating its 20th anniversary. In its early stages, the movement was largely a white, middle-class phenomenon. A little later in our program, we'll meet one of the women who has extended the movement to the needs of black women. First, we have two of the early members of the Boston Women's Health Book Collective, Esther Rome and Nancy Hawley. Nancy is one of the organizers of the collective and now is a board member. Esther came to the first meeting of the collective and still is a member. The group first met to discuss the women's frustrations with doctors. Nancy remembers some of the frustrations she experienced with her gynecologist at the time.
My first child was born in Ann Arbor, and that was in the summer of 1966. And it was the head of the women's hospital who was my physician at that time. And my husband and I went to a Lamaze class. Now, he thought that was kind of cute, that I and my husband would be interested in learning that much and in doing preparing for childbirth and possibly considering not using any drugs unless there was some reason. And I know that after I gave birth to my son without drugs and had used the skills I had learned in the class taught by a woman, that we were still considered kind of unique, and he kind of patted me on the head and said, "That's very sweet of you, that you could do that."
Esther, what about you?
Well, one of the things that happened to me early on was at the time in the late 60s, birth control was illegal for unmarried women in Massachusetts, and of course abortion was illegal. And I went to, it happened to be connected with the university, so I went to the University Health Services, and it was a week before I was getting married, and I said I wanted to be fitted for a diaphragm, and the doctor looked at me and said, "Come back after you're married." And I said, "Well, what am I supposed to do till then?"
You know, Esther and I have never talked about this, Terry, but I had an identical experience in Ann Arbor.
Oh, really?
And what they said to me at the time, they would give it to me before if I could bring in an engagement announcement. Now, we weren't doing a wedding like that. I didn't have an engagement announcement from a newspaper. And I finally convinced the nurse helped me out.
Well, I also knew some women in college who had to go to Puerto Rico or other places for abortions.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, it wasn't easy to take care of sexual and reproductive needs at that time in an open way as a woman.
Well, you know, I know one of the things that interested me when I first started reading Our Bodies Ourselves was that you had photographs in there of women's bodies, of women's bodies pregnant, of women's bodies having, you know, in childbirth, of women and men and women having sexual relations. And, you know, in all kinds of, like, health books in the past, what you got to see was that reproductive diagram, you know, with the two ovaries.
Right, right. No heads, right?
Yeah, it was just you know, like some like, not stick figure, but like an illustration with just a little bit of anatomy in circles, right? The fallopian tubes, the ovaries. And like there were like real women, and you could look at your bodies and look at their bodies and realize, well, this is what bodies are like. And I think for women at that time, there was still this sense of down there, this sense of kind of mystery, sense of somewhat embarrassment about your own body. Is that one of the things you were trying to like work against, you know, try to do away with?
Well, one of the things I want to say, you're saying that they were women's bodies. We were very conscious of the fact that we wanted to portray women, and sometimes they had their clothes on and sometimes they didn't, but we were very careful in most cases not to fragment the bodies in the picture, that we wanted whole people as much as possible.
And not fashion models either.
That's right.
Let me ask you what you think some of the greatest accomplishments of the women's healthcare movement have been in the past 20 years?
Oh, I go back and forth about that because sometimes it feels like we're still running in place.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's certainly a greater acknowledgement among some doctors that women are really interested in what's going on and they are willing to be partners with women. Now, medical education hasn't changed that much, so doctors are still educated in a much more authoritarian manner, but some of the doctors who get through medical school are still able to work with their clients, really, not so much patients. There are certainly many more women going to medical school today, but the numbers of women alone without changes in attitude is not really sufficient to change health and medical care.
You know, one of the things I was thinking about is that in the past 20 years, so much has changed, a lot for the better, some for the worse. But one area that seems to have changed very little is birth control. I mean, I can't really think of a really popular, widely used form of birth control that has entered the repertory since the Boston Women's Health Collective was organized back in the late 60s. I know there's the cervical cap, but I wonder, like, how many women really use it?
Well, part of the problem with the cervical cap has to do with distribution, and there's political problems with setting up distribution for that. Part of the problem, I think, is that there's been very little research on new barrier methods of birth control. Most of the research has gone into various kinds of hormonal contraceptives. They are being tested in other countries, but they haven't really met the safety standards in this country, which frankly could be better than they are even. Another thing, too, is you have to look at the economics of birth control. Birth control pills are highly profitable. A woman needs to take one, you know, every day or nearly every day of her cycle. There's repeat sales. And the profits are great enough that the companies can cover the lawsuits that they get. One of the problems with the IUD is that you don't have a lot of repeat sales. There's only so much you can charge per item, and the profit wasn't high enough to cover the lawsuits. Now, you can say that you need a product which doesn't have so many lawsuits attached to it, and that would be a better product.
My guests are Nancy Hawley and Esther Rome, who have both been involved with the Boston Women's Health Book Collective since its beginnings, and the collective is celebrating its 20th anniversary. What would you say is the greatest setback in recent years to the women's health movement?
Oh, the abortion issue. Definitely the abortion issue. I mean, the fact is, I remember demonstrations in the early 70s. I remember one that I helped organize, which was the first demonstration against, supporting the right for women to have abortion, and abortion was still illegal in the state. And I remember a number of friends having to go to New York to get legal abortions. And we made such progress. And now we're in a very difficult time, and it really feels like, it feels awful that the funds that we have to use to reinstate rights and improve upon the rights that we fought for so hard in the early 70s, I think that's the hardest one that I see.
I also see the poverty playing a very large role in the disintegration of health, particularly of women and children.
I think, also when you talk about poverty, I think about drugs, and I think about there wasn't even the awareness of what the effects of alcohol and other kind of drugs would have on us as women and as childbearing women, and the prevalence of drug abuse, the prevalence of child and sexual abuse. I mean, those were things, alcoholism, we were not even aware of. They're not even mentioned in the first book, any of those issues. And the whole topic of women and alcoholism became a section of a chapter in a book because people had written to us and raised concerns.
Mm-hmm. What's kept the collective together for 20 years?
Well, I spoke about this at our recent celebration party on the 13th, May 13th. And I think what kept us together is what got us started in the beginning, that we came together for both personal and work and political reasons. And that powerful combination of really being able to love your work and work with your friends has kept us together, because there's so many ways in which our lives weave together. I mean, we raised children together, we ran playgroups together, we wrote books together, we gave workshops together, we celebrated weddings, we grieved over the loss of parents, we went through divorces together, we've gone through menopause together.
Some of us.
And I think the combination of those experiences has kept us really connected, even if we don't see each other all the time.
Nancy, Esther, I wish you both a happy anniversary, and thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Esther Rome and Nancy Hawley of the Boston Women's Health Book Collective. Coming up, more about the women's health movement from Billy Avery, the founder of the National Black Women's Health Project. This is Fresh Air.